Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Greg Grochowski, ISACA International President, and with Howard Bud Friedman, ISACA early leader and president in 1973 and 74. Greg and Bud, thank you for coming in today to share your deep experiences with our audience.
Thank you, Stephen, for the opportunity.
And thank you also, Stephen.
Now, Bud, you have this amazing background, and I know it could probably last 2 hours because you've done so much, but in about 3 minutes, can you profile your founding role with ISACA and ISACA's evolution?
Well, Stephen, to be candid, the best way to start this is before I got involved. The association got started in 1967 when Gene Frank started it by contacting others in the local industry, and the group that he finally got together started meeting at Diamond Jim's restaurant in Los Angeles. In 1969, things were going pretty well for the association, and they incorporated, and Stu Ternauer became chairman. The meetings, though, were held in a very informal manner. Now, in December 1971, I came to a meeting of the association in the Roger Young Auditorium in Los Angeles, seeking to find out about the EDPAA and to join it. I was the new EDP audit manager at Northrop at the time. What I did find out was that the board of directors had resigned en masse, except for Gene, because of conflicting personal reasons. When I got there, I saw Gene sitting in the restaurant, disconsolate, unhappy, but somehow hoping to continue the organization. We talked, and he convinced me to join him in trying to determine if others would be interested in keeping the association going. We sent out about, maybe 100 letters to various companies in the area using an old mailing list from the association. 26 people responded. Gene and I led the first formal meeting of the EDPAA. 20 of the 26 people had volunteered at that time for various positions as officers, directors, and committee chairmen. Now, Gene was elected president, and I became executive vice president. We had $25 in the bank when we got started. Now, the first year that we were very busy was, of course, 1972, and many things happened during that period of time. Too many things to discuss in this brief narrative. But what's important was that we were involved in new chapter development, a rewrite of the organization charter when we decided to go national, publication of the first EDP auditing magazine, discussions of standards development, and I also participated in the development of the first national EDP audit conference in June of 1973. Several things happened during that period of time and that led to our national development, which is probably another story. But basically, during that year, we got a flurry of inquiries regarding our organization, and basically, that's how we all got started. It was a great year.
Well, Bud, just an amazing amount of work that you did in helping to launch this, really the premier organization in the space. Now, Greg, can you profile your involvement with ISACA and your specific measurable goals during your term of office?
Absolutely. And again, Stephen, thanks for the opportunity to be here and spend some time with you. And it's quite an honor to be here with Bud again as well. Had the opportunity to meet Bud several years ago in Los Angeles, along with other past presidents, and most recently at ISACA's World Insights conference here in San Francisco, along with Gene Frank, and to be with the founders and listen to their stories of the creation and support of this great organization, for me is just quite the honor. And that bodes well to my involvement. You know, I think I share similar passions, similar interests with Bud and the creators of ISACA, and I think a lot of the members of the organization do as well. My involvement started about 20 years ago, as I became a CISA, a Certified Information Systems Auditor, working for the Dow Chemical Company, and we were fairly young in the IT audit space at that time, and went to attend a conference and met some ISACA headquarters folks, and they asked for some ideas on how to improve the conference and satisfaction with ISAC, and I said, well, you know, I think we should do a few things like this, this, and this, and just some constructive ideas to make what we're doing even better. And the next thing you know, I was invited to a committee, a task force, and then over the years I was a speaker, been on several conference and committees and white papers again, and just continued with my involvement. Most recently, last 6 or 8 years, I've been on the audit committee, the finance committee, the knowledge board, the professional issues and advocacy groups, and been on the board, and then just recently, several weeks ago, became the international president for ISACA. So my involvement goes back 20 years, but I think the passion and the goals are the same. Is what can we do to enhance the profession on an international basis so that the organizations and our members benefit from that value? When it comes to measurable goals during the term of office, as the board, we try to set the strategy. And if the strategy is successful, obviously the measurable components will be there. We're focused on collaboration to further extend ourselves into other parts of the IT space that help us have a discussion with additional folks who have a critical role in the assurance profession. We're talking about the programmers, the network security guys, the implementers, those that are that have intimate knowledge of implementations and a deeper technical advantage point from their role, having that deeper discussion on building in more effective controls. We've made significant strides over the 40 plus years, but we still have some work to do. The dynamics of the IT space is pretty complex, and we have some more work to do there. So it's really on strategy. It's really on delivering value to our members. The constant update and delivery of relevant material to our constituents and members and academia, the outreach and collaboration, and really just the constant innovation that we need to bring to ISACA so that our members are united into the value story of what it means to be a certified and what it means to be a part of the ISACA organization.
Well, thank you for that, Greg. So from Bud, I'm hearing just an incredible history in terms of the formation of this premier organization. And from Greg, I can see that a great vision for the future and for today. And the idea of collaboration would be exciting to the audience because more than 1,200 other associations and organizations will be hearing this interview. So they would want to hear more about that. So that's great. Now, Bud, what would you like to share about your work outside of ISACA and valuable shareable lessons?
Well, first let me say that, Greg, I was very impressed with your description of your goals and objectives, and you're right about the fact that a lot of what you're doing is hopefully not as sophisticated as yours, but what we tried to do in the beginning was, you know, pretty much the same objectives. With respect to my work that I've done outside the ISACA, well, first off, let me tell you, Stephen, that I retired in 1994. I was at Northrop Corporation at the time. And what I'm going to have to say, I think, makes a comparison between the old days and what it is today. At the time, I was manager of EDP audit at Northrop, reporting to the director of internal audit. I had a heavy background in computer systems. I was not an auditor, nor did I have a heavy financial background. Also, in those days, it's a different era. Computers in those days were mostly large mainframe processing with serial. Things like laptops and things didn't exist. Television is relatively new at the time. What I brought to Northrop and what I brought to the auditing profession was that I was a systems programmer, systems auditor, systems developer, and techniques that allowed for auditing became an important aspect of what I contributed. Auditors then were predominantly financial, had financial backgrounds, and what they did was audited around the computer. What I was trying to bring to the table, and I think I did effectively, certainly through the organization at EDPAA, was how to audit within the computer. Now, as today, what we did and what the objective of what we did was necessary to ensure that management had confidence in the systems that they relied on to manage and make decisions.
So that's fascinating, that experience and leadership positions that you've held outside in industry and how you led innovation, in essence, in the auditing space in industry. Now, Greg, can you profile your history and then roles outside of ISAC as well? And valuable shareable lessons.
Absolutely. My history, I go back in the Dow Chemical Company nearly 30 years. I'm an accountant by trade, by degree, but started in Dow doing accounting. And our entries back then were on triplicate paper form, and then we submitted and somebody in some building typed something into a computer for all the entries. And shortly after that, there was some openings and positions in the IET department, and I started to see the rollout to some more computers at that time. You understand these were display rights and some of the early versions of the Macs and the Apples of the Mac SEs, and I really became mesmerized with technology and devices. And I actually made a career change in the early 80s and became a software analyst. So I was installing operating system software, telecommunications, anything that IBM basically produced and DEC and Digital Equipment Company produced at the time, from PDP 1170s and the DEC systems and operating systems all the way through the IBM systems, became basically my life for about a 6 or 7 year period. And it was an invaluable lesson for me on using technology to further business objectives and information processing. And shortly after that, I was audited and went through the audit process. And I actually helped the folks who came in and performed the audit back then because, again, technology expertise was quite limited. And then 6 months later, the corporate auditor called me and asked if I'd like to join auditing, because they were just beginning an IT audit group. And there I went to auditing, performed financial and IT audits, moved to Europe, performed financial and IT audits, and then came back and was the IT audit director. Moved back to controllers over a 12 to 13 year period, and then was just recently, 2 years ago, named the chief audit executive for the Dow Chemical Company. So that history, that lessons of using technology in business and operations and finance has served me well over that time. Throughout that course, I've been able to get engaged with other fine organizations. I'm a member of the Financial Executives International, and I participated on the Committee for Finance and Information Technology. I'm also a member of the Institute of Internal Auditors, the IAA, and participate on the Audit Executive Center and participate in roundtables talking about issues and risks and concerns and issues facing the audit profession. Belong to several other roundtables of chief audit executives where we get together and try to tackle today's problems with respect and opportunities with respect to risks on a global basis. Valuable lessons is just you can't be complacent. You just have to constantly learn, constantly apply, constantly raise the bar, because process is changing, people is changing, technology is changing. And for me, the valuable lesson is complacency is really a career-ending attribute. And you just have to continue to adapt and adopt the best and change accordingly as the world and events occur around you.
Well, again, as with Bud, just a remarkable history of accomplishment and success, and really quite inspiring to the audience. Now, as a follow-up, Greg, what were the top takeaways from the ISACA World Congress that provide some value to governments, industry, and academia?
Well, Stephen, you raised the ISACA World Congress. That was an event that ISACA had several weeks ago in San Francisco. It's our annual meeting, where we try to do a little something differently, where we try to have a no PowerPoint presentation type conference, where we collaborate and we talk and we discuss current issues and trends and information. It's well attended. It's a unique group of panel members and presenters that help make up the conference, so that we really do have a premier list of people there to discuss. I guess the takeaways that I would bring to the listeners' attention is that the keynote speaker was actually a pair of jugglers, and the jugglers in performing their professional routine dealt with the normal things, the balls, the bowling pins, but then they went a bit more complicated and a bit more dangerous with the things that they were juggling. But part of their message, the key points of their message, was ICE, standing for innovation, collaboration, and execution. So a takeaway from that is certainly the ICE theme. And that bodes well not only for our organization, ISACA's organization, but for other organizations, because it really boils down to that that what I referred to earlier, the complaint system is the issue, but also the need to innovate, the need to collaborate, and the need to execute. And if you do that well, even the most dangerous juggling routines can appear to be pretty simplified, even to the amazement of the audience. So that'd be my first, second, and third takeaway was ICE, innovation, collaboration, and execution. I guess the fourth takeaway was a discussion on outsourcing. The panel that was on the stage at the time was split and actually provided some dissension, which you don't normally see at conferences. Because everybody's pretty much in agreement, et cetera. But, you know, when you have three or four people on the stage from different backgrounds, we had some dissensions on the pros and cons of outsourcing. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, we centered around if you're going to do that, you need to do it for the right reasons, understand the right risks, you know, understand your partners and what a partnership means and the relationships. Talk about value. Talk about return of investment. Talk about audit rights and the legalities of contracts and really the responsibility that needs to entail within the corporation rather than just outsourcing an activity. So that was an interesting discussion on outsourcing. And then the fifth takeaway, it was towards the end of the conference. It was a discussion on the emerging technologies. And again, a real preeminent group of individuals. Again, some interesting discussion and again, some dissension on the impact of emerging technologies. Again, it's this innovation, the speed to market, this change, relative to perceived bureaucracy. Bureaucracy being, you know, the auditor saying and the professional saying you have to have good change control and you have to have the right, delegational authority and the right testing. And in today's market, with the speed by which technology is just rolling out and this bring your own device activity and stuff, it's quite amazing that discussion captured the essence of the attendees at the World Insights Conference, because there was really some opposing views on the need to meet business objectives and the need to meet demand, while at the same point in time, incorporating best practices on assurance and good governance and security and audit. Those were five good takeaways that I would, those would come to my recollection. It was a great conference.
And Bud, from your perspective on the recent ISACA World Congress, what were your sort of key takeaways?
Well, Stephen, I have to say that to me it was very huge and very impressive, and I think I can clarify that by simply describing how we were in the beginning and what I saw a few weeks ago. Our first national conference was in June 1973 in Santa Monica, California. There had never been a conference before that focused on computers and auditing, at least none that I was aware of. There were two competing organizations at the time, the Institute of Internal Auditors and the AICPA, and I think the Canadian Charter of Accountants were also in existence at the time, but their focus was more on financial auditing as opposed to computer-related auditing, which was relatively new at the time. Anyway, about 160 to 200 people attended our first conference. It was from all over the country. It was a two-day conference. Now, just seeing ISACA's current World Congress meetings in San Francisco, it represented an organization that has 100,000 plus members, has 198 chapters in 81 countries, and had $73 million in total assets. Very, very impressive compared to the $100 or $200 or so that we had when we first started. The subject matter dealt with issues and concepts that are far beyond anything that we could have thought of at the time back then. Now, it's the current motto, the motto in that conference was, be prepared to be inspired. The first national conference, which I was a participant in and became president, the motto was, EDP auditing, a coming of age. That, to me, is really what the difference is today. We have come of age, haven't we?
Yeah, that's a credible sort of insight, because you've spanned the sort of the history of ISACA, and I had the privilege of being there, and as an outsider observing, I thought it was probably the finest conference I've ever attended, and the level of engagement and discussion was just amazing. In fact, to the audience, I would recommend, in fact, highly recommend that they look at attending and, in fact, joining ISACA. and getting engaged in all the events associated with ISAC. It's just a really a premier organization. Now, this is both for Greg and Bud. What do you see as some of the top disruptive technologies, and what do you see as the impact they'll have?
Well, I'll go first, but before I continue to do so, I just want to draw a reference to what Bud is referring to as the EDPAA, the Electronic Data Processing Audit Association. That we are talking about the same organization, EDPAA and ISACA. EDPAA was the name, the original name, and it was modified in 1992, I believe, to reflect the change of information systems versus electronic data processing from a nomenclature perspective. But we are talking about the same organization.
It was
1994, okay. So that's, again, you have to continue to adapt and adapt, and a name change was part of the adaptation. But getting back to your question, Stephen, on disruptive technologies, and what we heard at the conference and more recently in some literature, you know, is this continuing evolution of the bring-your-own-device activity and how is that secured and within companies, you know, the vulnerabilities that are brought with it, and the tracking and the data privacy, but also containing corporate data or company or organization data on your own device and prone to loss, prone to more hands on the device than maybe what you'd like to have. So that's still continuing to evolve. The projections on the bring your own device graph are still quite exponential. So we're clearly not at the peak of that technology yet. It's happening right now, but again, we're definitely not at the peak of that element yet. Oh, I would probably add in, you know, the continued use of robotic technologies, where, you know, we're just getting smarter machines doing more, and what they're doing with the technology and chip advancements of layering, you know, these resistors and et cetera with respect to the technology. It's just quite amazing what today's devices are doing. Further development into whole, the consumerism technology space. You know, today you're getting computers in the cars and homes, and they're going to be in the refrigerators. And if you forget to lock your house, you can, you know, go through an app and lock your house and do more things. I mean, some of that you're doing today, but you're going to continue to see more of that. So the disruptive part of that is, it's some of that is there today, but we're clearly not at the peak. I think in the adoption of all of that technology and what potential there is. So I think we're just going to continue to run into the security and the risk issues of that, the governance, the availability of information, the security of all of that. We still have a ways to go in dealing with all of these technologies.
I'm going to leave that one to Greg, I think, because I did retire in 1994. Technology in those 18 years has moved significantly. I'm having trouble as a grandfather just keeping up with my cell phone and anything else of little electronic devices today. So I really can't answer the question effectively because I've been out of the business for so long. But I have to admire the things that are going on and the problems and as you call them, the disruptive technologies and how they affect us all are happening. So I'm just going to leave that one to Greg.
Okay, so for the next question, it's kind of an involved question, so maybe I can sort of get you to sort of keep it short in terms of do you support it or not, and that is this whole concept of computing as a recognized profession with demonstrated professional development, adherence to a code of ethics, recognized, perhaps non-license-based credentials, and so on. Are you supportive or not?
Well, let me answer that first, Greg, and then you can chime in. I don't think the question is that relevant to me. As I say, I've been out of the business for a while. When I was in the business, and I was part of the computer community in 1956, from there on afterwards, and I saw computers grow from vacuum tube mainframe devices to what it is today. And from what I know of it today, it is a recognized profession with many, many, many professional attributes. In my day, the leading professional certificate for a data processor was the CDP, the Certified Data Processor. Today, it must be thousands of times larger than that and expanded. So I'd have to say that things have changed and have gone way beyond me.
I would say that I'm supportive. To answer the question simply, I'm very supportive. Any guidance, direction, or professional relevant material to help advance a person's knowledge, career, or stature, that's just a good thing. Okay, non-licensed credentials to me are quite valuable. Taking into account the longevity of the organization, the stature and discipline that organization brings to its credentials, and really perception that the credential itself matches the demands and complexity of the profession. To me, credentialing demonstrates a valid understanding of the area or technology for which the credential serves. So again, it's this complacency issue. You have to continue to adapt. You got to continue to adopt. You got to continue to learn. And one venue of doing that is certainly the credentialing venue. And to me, that adds value to your career and value to the profession.
Okay, we're down to our last question, and we have about 30 seconds left apiece, and that is, if you were conducting this interview, what one question would you ask, and then what would be your answer? And we'll start with Greg first.
I think the question I would ask is, what does the next 43 years hold for ISACA? And looking on Bud and Jane's insight to starting this great organization, it's 43 years young, and we really become, I think, a preeminent organization. You know, for me, what's the next 43 years hold? I think it continues to require the innovation, collaboration, execution. The global economy is certainly much smaller than we think in terms of the impact that we can have because we're so connected today than we were 43 years ago, and the dynamics of that is quite interesting. So we really do have a value proposition to play. We just have to continue to serve our members and continue to adapt to meet their needs.
And then Bud?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I had one question, kind of a personal one. The question would be, why do you continue to have such a high interest in ISACA and what it represents? And I think my answer simply is, from my perspective, I think of it as my legacy. And with what little I did was as an important contribution to bettering the world. And to me, that was what this whole thing is all about. And also, just let me add that I want to wish Greg the very, very best for his administration.
Thank you, Bud.
Well, Greg and Bud, I know your schedules are very demanding, and we're really fortunate to have you both come in to do this interview. So thank you for sharing your deep insights and experiences with our audience.
Thank you, Stephen.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Greg Grochowski, ISACA International President, and with Howard Bud Friedman, ISACA Early Leader and President in 1973-74.